For more than three decades, Bill McKibben has been one of the most influential and clearest voices warning about the dangers of a warming planet. His landmark 1989 book, The End of Nature, helped introduce climate change to a broad American audience, and his work as an environmentalist, journalist, and organizer has shaped how we understand the stakes of our rapidly changing world. In his new book, Here Comes the Sun, A Last Chance for the Climate and a Fresh Chance for Civilization, McKibben argues that while the window to act is narrowing, it is not yet closed. He points to the extraordinary rise of renewable energy, especially solar, as a global inflection point that could transform economies, redistribute power, and give communities a way to imagine a more sustainable and just future. At an October event at Skidmore College for Northshire Bookstore, Bill McKibben discussed the path forward before a full audience at Powell Mountain Hall, who joined me in welcoming Bill McKibben.
The subtitle, and I just want to key in on these words, A Last Chance for the Climate and a Fresh Chance for Civilization. A last chance. In other words, we've been trying a lot of stuff, but this is really something that we can't screw up.
That's right.
I mean, we can, but we shouldn't.
That's right. We've been given, finally, a tool that we can no longer stop global warming. That's not one of the options here. The question is, can we stop it somewhere short of the place where it just cuts civilization off at the knees? And cheap, clean energy is the first scalable tool that we have had in that fight. And it comes at such a late date in the fight that it's probably the last scalable tool we're going to have in the time that matters. So just to be clear, the climate crisis is ticking along at a desperate rate now. The things that I was warning about 35 years ago are all come true and many more now. I mean, and now at the most systemic level. It's not just the fires and the floods that we see every day. The biggest physical systems on Earth, the jet stream, which draws its power from the differential in temperature between the pole and the equator. Well, now the pole's much warmer, and that system does not work the way that it used to. It gets stuck for long periods in these high amplitude formations that lead to weird weather on all sides. The Gulf Stream and the other currents of the Atlantic, which are 100 times the flow of the Amazon River, the biggest heat distribution system on the Earth. Well, as fresh water pours off a melting Greenland, it changes the salinity of the North Atlantic and hence the differences in density that drive those vast conveyor belts. They're flickering and faltering. We're doing deep damage to the most fundamental systems, and the time that we have, if we have time, to deal with it is very short. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change told us a few years ago that if we wanted to be on anything like the Paris timetable that we set out in a decade ago, we would need to cut emissions in half by 2030, which by my watch is now 4 years away. So we've got a hell of a lot of work to do. That's why it's nice that we finally have some tools with which to do that work.
Sun is in the title, but wind is as much a part of this
Absolutely. As and wind, sun. And I'm glad you said that, because wind is just another form of solar power. The sun heats the earth differentially and creating the breezes that turn those majestic turbines. And as it turns out, the sun and wind are remarkable complements for energy. On a kind of geographical basis, as you get further north where the sun is less powerful, the winds become stronger. On a daily basis, especially along the coasts, as the sun goes down in the afternoon is when the winds kick up. These two things need to be built together. And then the third component, with sun and wind, are now the ever cheaper batteries that allow us, in essence, to not have the sun set or the wind drop. That's the kind of holy trinity that we're talking about here.
You say sun and wind are therefore complementary, and they have a triplet hydropower.
Hydropower. We don't talk about it much because we've built out all the hydropower pretty much that we're going to build out. We can make the turbine somewhat better, and but truthfully, hydropower may become a little less useful in a lot of places over the next year simply because the levels of drought that we're now causing by raising the temperature tends to reduce the availability of hydro at critical seasons.
So was the problem in solar, because now you're talking about the fact that it is affordable, that it is cheap.
It's not just cheap. I mean, it is really cheap. We crossed this invisible line where it became cheaper than coal and gas and oil sometime at the beginning of this decade. We live on a planet where the cheapest way to make energy is to point a sheet of glass at the sun. But every year, it gets cheaper still. And this is sort of key to understanding this particular part of the future. We're used to thinking of energy as a commodity. Coal, gas, oil, you go dig them out, drill them, whatever, have some of them, burn them, whatever. That's not really what's going on here. You do need to do some mining of some lithium and some cobalt, and we can talk about that, I bet we will, a little later. But basically, when you've assembled this fairly small bit of mineral input and built your solar panels and things, the energy comes for free from the sun and the wind. What you're really leveraging is human ingenuity, the fact that we get better at this stuff with each passing year. So I put solar panels on my house right around the turn of the century when they were expensive and so on. But if I wasn't going to do it, who was, you know? And they're still working fine, but sometime in the next 5 or 10 years, we'll probably take them down and replace them. When we do, the stuff that's in the ones I put up around the year 2000, each solar panel has enough boron and silver and the other kind of working things to make 5 or 6 solar panels now, because we've gotten that much better at building these things. It's not that it's a circular economy. It's more like a kind of Mobius strip, you know. It's really quite remarkable. Not all technologies get on a learning curve like this. Coal and gas and oil were cheap from the beginning. They're still relatively cheap, but they're not getting any cheaper. In fact, you have to go farther back in the coal mine to get the coal now, so it's somewhat more expensive. But this stuff is, in this sense, magical. It tends towards, tends towards zero. And the things that go with it, that we're learning, the appliances that go with the energy that we're now creating, are almost as magic. I mean, the heat pump instead of the furnace, the EV instead of the car, the induction cooktop, I'm the cook in our household, I've, 10 years ago, got from Amazon for $50, an induction cooktop. I can't tell you how it works, magnets, but I can tell you that it boils water twice as fast as the gas stove I used to have, and I can tell you that the epidemiologists think your kid has half as much chance of getting asthma if they grow up in a house without an open campfire in the kitchen. The most miraculous of all these technologies may turn out to be the e-bike, if you ask me. I mean, because around the world, hundreds of millions of people are now getting these things, and especially in the developing world. A bicycle was good technology to start with, but now we've invented a bicycle that has no hills. I mean, that's a true breakthrough in human, development. And it goes something like 5 miles on a penny's worth of electricity on average. So people talked a lot about abundance this year. There's no abundance that compares with the wash of energy pouring out of the sun every single day.
Bill McKibben is our guest. The new book is Here Comes the Sun.
Two things. My job, of course, is host, but also as an observer. And I noticed two things in the answer that you just gave. One is that we actually had an audience member who applauded when you said boron. I think that's pretty cool. That's a cool
The periodic
thing.
Table to the
yes,
rescue.
They get very, very excited by that. And the second And I don't know, it was just me, but you shop at Amazon?
Not very often, but in those days, 10 years ago, that was the only place you could get something as exotic as an induction cooktop. But now you can get them everywhere, and I bet, including at the Kitchen Center here in Saratoga.
Yeah.
And if you want, we've now, a couple of years ago, we actually, you know, paid the money, $1,000 to build, you know, to get the whole stovetop put in. So now I've got four induction burners. And I read a story in the someplace the other day about how the best chefs were now, somehow this is not translated into me becoming a great chef, but I do okay. And it really is remarkable to have a kitchen without fumes in it, you know? You don't need a hood to suck them away.
So back in the 70s, we had a president who was less interested in putting up a new ballroom and more interested in putting solar panels on the White House.
Yeah.
And for many, that was to be a Kickstarter for the solar industry and to let it go wild.
Yep.
Well, obviously, Reagan didn't help.
Yep.
But my question is just, what was it then about it that didn't allow it to take off and to ultimately become cheaper at that point?
It wasn't some technical obstacle. It's just that you need a source of money to be allowing this kind of constant iteration to go on. So Carter, in his last budget, had proposed enough R&D money to make sure that America was producing 20% of its power from the sun by the year 2000. Had we followed through on that, we would live in a very different world right now, a much cooler one, because among other things, China's industrial ascent would have happened at that same moment, and they would have been able to incorporate, instead of just burning endless coal, they would have been able to do this. So the next burst of money doesn't come until the year 2000. Germany has a very different political system than ours because it's parliamentary. That means that the Green Party there, when it got 10% of the vote, didn't spoil the election. It got instead leverage in the parliament, and they used that leverage, they were the balance of power, to demand what they called the Energiewende. Germany started paying a high price for power from people who'd put solar panels on their rooftops and things. They essentially subsidized expensive solar energy for about 5 years, which created the demand that allowed the Chinese to start getting good at building this stuff. And I was in China some in those years watching the early parts of that, and it's just sort of snowballed ever since, to the point now where the Chinese are building 65% of the clean energy on this planet. And it is, I mean, the scale of it is astonishing. In May, the Chinese were building 3 gigawatts of solar power a day. A gigawatt's the equivalent of a large coal-fired power plant. They were putting up one of those every 8 hours out of solar panels, okay? It's not just the solar panels themselves, it's all the things that go with it. You and I are used to thinking of Detroit as the center of automotive excellence in the world. That is a very outmoded way of thinking of things. There's two or three cities in China whose names are hard for me to pronounce that are now the hubs of the automobile world. They're producing the best cars and the cheapest cars on the planet, all of them electric. As a result, everybody in China is buying them. I haven't been back to China for the last 18 months or so, but I've talked with friends even in the last 6 months who say, you know what? It's it's not only much, much cleaner. Those Chinese cities are no longer atop the most polluted cities in the world. It's also much, much, much quieter in Beijing and Shanghai because the bulk of the automobiles are electric. Astonishing change. And what Biden did with the IRA was an effort to kind of try and get America back in this game, you know, let us start to catch up. Now that we've gutted it, I mean, when American historians write about the last 9 months, the story will be about this rise of whatever weird form of off-brand fascism we're playing with at the moment. But when world historians write about it, It'll be about the passage of technological and economic primacy from the U.S. to China in the course of a year. And with that, eventually, probably quickly, I think, will come some political primacy as well. The world is headed off to climate talks in Brazil next month, minus the U.S., the country that has put the most carbon in the air, is the one country in the world not participating in the effort to do anything about it. In one sense, that's a tragedy. In another sense, you know what? The rest of the world may actually do a better job of getting its act together without us in the way for once. So it's an incredibly interesting moment. For Americans, again, a tragedy, since we invented this stuff. I mean, the first solar cell was 1954, Bell Labs, Edison, New Jersey. Footnote to that story, Joe. I looked up the New York Times front page to read the story about the first solar cell. It's on the front page, and it runs next to a story about everybody happily lining up for the first polio vaccines in the U.S. Has changed in this country in 70 years, I gotta say.
That was before brainworms.
Yeah, before brainworms. Exactly right. First commercial wind turbine in the world was Grandpa's Knob in the Taconics in Vermont in 1943. So we invented this stuff, you know, and now we've just handed it over lock, stock, and barrel while we're literally shutting it down. They stopped what would have been the largest solar farm in America in Nevada, a single solar array that would have produced enough power for 2 million homes. Look, there's only 130 million homes in America. That one array in Nevada would have taken care of 1.5% or more of the houses in this country. That's the kind of thing that other countries are doing now and we're not. And that's, as I say, a great tragedy, but it doesn't change the essential momentum around the earth. And it means that we're all gonna have to figure out how to make this happen at the state and local level, since it's not, at least in the short run, going to be happening at the federal level here.
So how do we do that in the short term in the state and local level?
That's where,
I mean, we're seeing it,
yep.
But we're also, in the last 10 months, seeing a lot of it.
Absolutely.
Have trouble.
So there's a lot of answers to that, but they all basically come down to organizing. To put pressure on. I'm really happy to see my colleagues from Third Act Upstate New York here with us today, Michael Richardson and everybody else who've been doing a fantastic job of organizing. Third Act is this thing we set up just in case there's anybody who's crossed the 60-year barrier in this audience. We've come together, you know, sort of a coalition of, the follicularly challenged, you know, to try and do what we can. And we're getting a lot done, especially on these issues. In New York State, there's been a lot of backsliding going on. We actually have pretty good laws, at least the beginning of them, that are supposed to, we're supposed to be working on 15 gigawatts of renewable power in New York right now over the next 5 years. The governor, as is her wont, is not speeding ahead, let us say, on this project, and needs to be pushed. Also, at the local level, all over the state, we need prodding to make it easier, not to build necessarily big solar farms, but just to put this stuff on your roof. So, you know, it costs about 3 times as much to put solar panels on your roof in America as it does in Australia or the EU. And it's not because the panels are more expensive. There's a little bit because of tariffs and stuff, but that's not that important. It's because we have way too much bureaucracy in the way. We've got 15,000 municipalities in this country. Each one has its own building code. Each one would like to send a team of guys up to look at your roof, whatever. It's not needed. 40% of the homes in Australia have solar panels on the roof. Trust me, if there was an epidemic of solar panel fires, Fox News would be telling you about it 24/7, okay? We have this, there's this app that the National Renewable Energy Lab came up with a few years ago, the Solar App Plus. It's instant permitting. The contractor taps in the address. He taps in the equipment he's going to put at that address. If the computer likes it, it gives him an instant permit, and he's up on the roof. It starts you in the direction of the rest of the world, where this is a project, putting solar on the roof, measured in days, not measured in months or years, as it often is in this country. So far, California, Maryland have mandated that Solar App Plus, and New Jersey, I think it's passed both houses of the legislature, awaiting the governor's signature. But that leaves us a lot of states, including this one, to get it done. I'll tell you another story, and this one illustrates the possibilities for this to cross ideological divisions. In the last couple of years in Europe, after the invasion of Ukraine, one of the technologies that took off was this thing we're calling balcony solar. This is for apartment dwellers, people who don't have a roof to play with, but they often have a balcony with a railing. If you're in some, you know, you're in Belgium, you go to whatever they call Best Buy in Belgium, and you give them a few hundred euros, and you come home with a solar panel designed to be draped over the railing, and then it just has a plug in the back. You just stick it in the wall. You don't need an electrician. There's no rewiring. And it produces 20%, 25% of the power that that apartment's using, probably enough to run a refrigerator, which is the biggest energy drain in most households. So that's good. It's also illegal everywhere in this country, except that progressive bastion, the state of Utah, which earlier this year, by unanimous vote in both houses of the state legislature, passed the enabling legislation on the unassailable logic of one of the state senator, Republican state senator who introduced the bill. And he said, if this is good enough for the people of Stuttgart, then it is good enough for the people of Provo. And, you know, and so be it. And if that can pass unanimously in the Utah state legislature, even the largely dysfunctional and clotted legislature in Albany should be able to deliver us at least that much. The state assembly rep from Greenpoint, what's her name?
Gallagher.
Emily Gallagher, introduced a bill to allow this in New York. Send a note to your representative saying, I want balcony solar, and I don't want to have to go to jail for it. So, you know, get it done.
The new book is Here Comes the Sun, A Last Chance for the Climate and a Fresh Chance for Civilization by Bill McKibben. The book is published by Norton. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.